DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A lawyer for President Biden revealed Saturday five additional documents marked classified were found in his Delaware home last week. This comes amid a Justice Department investigation, and ABC's Mary Alice Parks in Washington has more on the political stakes.
We already know the Republicans have launched two investigations into these documents alone. The White House is very aware of how politically vulnerable this makes them. It can also be tricky for Republicans who have spent a lot of this last year defending President Trump's actions with and mishandling of classified information. So if they go too critical on Biden, this could backfire for them as well.
Today, the president speaks in Atlanta at the Ebenezer Baptist Church honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. President declared a disaster for two counties in Alabama hit hard by severe storms and tornadoes last week. Those storms blamed for at least nine deaths in two states. He also declared a disaster for three California counties where more rain and snow is falling. This is ABC News. First day of the NFL playoffs featured a historic comeback as the Jacksonville Jaguars, who trailed the San Diego Chargers 27-0, rallied to win 31-30, third largest comeback in NFL playoff history. The CDC says vaccination rates among students have fallen for the second year in a row.
The rate of fully vaccinated kids entering kindergarten fell 1% for the 2021-2022 school year, according to the CDC, from 94% to 93%. ABC News medical contributor Dr. Alok Patel says childhood vaccines protect against a host of severe illnesses.
The reason we don't see diseases like diphtheria, polio, tetanus, measles, mumps, rubella, all of those, is because vaccines work.
He says the further drop in vaccinations means about 250,000 kids are unprotected from those serious illnesses. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the government plans to go ahead with a massive overhaul of the judicial system despite protests. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Advocates for older Wisconsinites say the next state budget needs to prioritize the needs of seniors and the people who care for them. Here's Mike Mohn.
The legislature is being asked to reconsider the idea of a caregiver tax credit. Helen Marks Dix of AARP Wisconsin says it's been debated in previous sessions, but the problem hasn't gone away. She notes there are nearly 600,000 unpaid family caregivers in Wisconsin. We're feeling a lot of pressure right now.
They are spending about $7,000 out of their own pockets. And that doesn't count lost wages, lost retirements, or other things.
That figure represents annual average spending for each caregiver. The plan calls for a tax credit for some family members to reimburse up to 50% of certain expenses, with a limit of $500 per care recipient. The proposal has bipartisan support, but has struggled to make it out of committee. Dix feels that the current budget surplus of $6 billion might spur more fruitful negotiations. Dix says now is the time to make life a little easier for the state's aging population and address some of the growing obstacles that older residents face.
This is an opportunity when we have, hopefully, both the money and the goodwill to tackle this problem and to put the solutions in place before it gets to be more of a crisis.
Wisconsin is no stranger to a divided government, but Dix says there appears to be a sense of compromise in the air. Democratic Governor Tony Evers is expected to unveil his biennial budget proposal in mid-February. Following that, the Republican-led Joint Finance Committee throws in its suggestions before sending it to the full legislature. Evers will then have a chance to sign it, reject it, or apply changes with his partial veto power. Mike Mohn, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride. The poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. If you're just joining us, I am going to be playing speeches from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. As we approach the Dr. King holiday, and I just want people to understand what the fight was about, the reason that his life was taken, and the fact that if you listen to what he was talking about in 1967, we aren't so far away from that today. And it is frustrating, more than frustrating, to hear people who don't know about these things, who clearly want to say, you know, that that makes people feel bad. You know, injustice ought to make people feel bad, right? And the fact that, you know, these things have occurred, continue to occur in this nation, we've got to face it. So let's go to the phone lines quickly with CJ before we go back to Dr. King's The Other America. CJ, if you will, quickly.
Yeah, thank you, Earl. Dr. King, loved his speeches. I want to go back to the day where we're judged by our content of character and not the color of
Okay, so let me say this to you before you go there. As I said before, Dr. King also, you're going to hear a speech where he's going to say that the dream that I had became a nightmare. When Dr. King said, judge a person by the content of their character and not the color of their skin, he was in his 20s. This is Dr. King at the age of 39. He himself said that at the time that he said we should judge a person by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, that was a dream. His dream. It didn't happen, and that's why he said his dream became a nightmare. You hear it, because we're going to play it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, also, January 2nd, there was an Alabama student, a black young black man, that said, I'm leaving college because this is all about indoctrination and not education. So the mere fact that now, and look at Stanford. You just played a speech where he was playing in Stanford. You know you can't say grandfather in Stanford anymore.
Hey, CJ, let me.
Or America.
Hey, CJ.
You can't say
I'm not going to get into foolishness. Foolishness is you saying All right, cut him off, man. And then let's bring Dr. King back up because, you know, here's a prime example of someone who cannot comprehend what this is about. And the fact that he wants to ignore what Dr. King is saying, and he wants to go back, meaning CJ, he wants to go back to when Dr. King said, judge a person by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, and dismisses what this Dr. King, who is a more evolved person, having lived longer, and who realized that the dream that he had was not becoming a reality. Connor, I don't know, are you still looking for it? Okay, because, all right, start it up again.
Continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with all of the problems that I've talked about, and if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that we must do. The job ahead must be massive and positive. We must develop massive action programs all over the United States of America in order to deal with the problems that I have mentioned. Now, in order to develop these massive action programs, we've got to get rid of one or two false notions that continue to exist in our society. One is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. I'm sure you've heard this idea. It is the notion almost that is something in the very flow of time that will miraculously cure all evils. And I've heard this over and over again. There are those, and they're often sincere people, who say to Negroes and their allies in the white community that we should slow up and just be nice and patient and continue to pray, and in 100 or 200 years the problem will work itself out, because only time can solve the problem. Well, I think that is an answer to that myth, and it is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I'm absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme rightists in our nation, have often used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. And it may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words of the bad people and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, wait on time. Somewhere we must come to see that social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. And so we must help time, and we must realize that the time is always right to do right. Now, there's another notion that gets out. It's around everywhere. It's in the South, it's in the North, it's in California, and all over our nation. It's a notion that legislation can't solve the problem, it can't do anything in this area. And those who project this argument contend that you've got to change the heart, and that you can't change the heart through legislation. Now, I would be the first one to say that there is real need for a lot of heart changing in our country. And I believe in changing the heart. I preach about it. I believe in the need for conversion in many instances, and regeneration, to use theological terms. And I would be the first to say that if the race problem in America is to be solved, the white person must treat the Negro right, not merely because the law says it, but because it's natural, because it's right, and because the Negro is his brother. And so I realize that if we are to have a truly integrated society, men and women will have to rise to the majestic heights of being obedient to the unenforceable. But after saying this, let me say another thing which gives the other side, and that is that although it may be true that morality cannot be legislated, behavior can be regulated. Even though it may be true that the law cannot change the heart, it can restrain the heartless. Even though it may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, it can restrain him from lynching me. And I think that's pretty important also. And so while the law may not change the hearts of men, it can and it does change the habits of men. When you begin to change the habits of men, pretty soon the attitudes will be changed. Pretty soon the hearts will be changed. Now, I'm convinced that we still need strong civil rights legislation. And there's a bill.
All right, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Again, you are listening to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in 1967 at Stanford University, The Other America, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
A brand new excuse ain't I mean, but I made my moves with shackle feet, Cape Town.
In today's day and age, we practice the self-pity of taking the easy way out. You wait on them, him, and her. But when the blessing take too long, that's when you go wrong. You selfish mother.
Why so sad? Walking around with them blue faces. She said, I'm down on my luck, and it's something I gotta have.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
What is dedication?
People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication.
Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast. Cloudy skies expected today, with daytime highs approaching 38. Winds out of the south, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies again tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 33. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs level off around 39. Overcast skies. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Oshkosh Air Support. 98.3 FM, WISS, 1100 AM. Right now, 28.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network. CivicMedia.us.
So, all right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm going to just try to get through this. We got a few more minutes of Dr. King's The Other America. So, kind of let's just get right at it.
Federal open housing bill, a federal law declaring discrimination in housing unconstitutional, and also a bill to make the administration of justice real all over our country. Now, nobody can doubt the need for this. Nobody can doubt the need if he thinks about the fact that since 1963, some 58 Negroes and white civil rights workers have been brutally murdered in the state of Mississippi alone. Not a single person has been convicted for these dastardly crimes. There have been some indictments, but no one has been convicted. And so there is a need for the whole question of the administration of justice. There is a need for fair housing laws all over our country. And it is tragic indeed that Congress last year allowed this bill to die. And that bill died in Congress, a bit of democracy died, a bit of our commitment to justice died. And if it happens again in this session of Congress, a greater degree of our commitment to democratic principles will die. And I can see no more dangerous trend in our country than the constant developing of predominantly Negro-central cities ringed by white suburbs. This is only inviting social disaster. And the only way this problem will be solved is by the nation taking a strong stand and by state governments taking a strong stand against housing segregation and against discrimination in all of these areas. Now, there's another thing that I'd like to mention as I talk about the massive action program, and time will not permit me to go into specific programmatic action to any great degree. But it must be realized now that the Negro cannot solve the problem by himself. There again, there are those who always say to Negroes, why don't you do something for yourself? Why don't you lift yourselves by your own bootstraps? And we hear this over and over again. Now, certainly, there are many things that we must do for ourselves and that only we can do for ourselves. Certainly, we must develop within a sense of dignity and self-respect that nobody else can give us, a sense of manhood, a sense of personhood, a sense of not being ashamed of our heritage, not being ashamed of our color. It was wrong and tragic that the Negro ever allowed himself to be ashamed of the fact that he was black, or ashamed of the fact that his home, ancestral home, was Africa. And so there's a great deal that the Negro can do to develop self-respect. There's a great deal that the Negro must do and can do to amass political and economic power within his own community and by using his own resources. And so we must do certain things for ourselves, but this must not negate the fact and cause the nation to overlook the fact that the Negro cannot solve the problem himself. A man was on the plane with me some weeks ago, and he came and talked with me, and he said, the problem, Dr. King, that I see with what you all are doing is that every time I see you and other Negroes, you are protesting, and you aren't doing anything for yourselves. And he went on to tell me that he was very poor at one time, and he was able to make it by doing something for himself. Why don't you teach your people, he said, to lift themselves by their own bootstraps? And then he went on to say other groups face disadvantages, the Irish, the Italians, and he went down the line. And I said to him that it does not help the Negro, it only deepens his frustration for unfeeling and sensitive people to say to him that other ethnic groups who migrated or were immigrants to this country just 100 years ago or so have gotten beyond him, and he came here some 344 years ago. And I went on to remind him that the Negro came to this country involuntarily in chains, while others came voluntarily. I went on to remind him that no other racial group has been a slave on American soil. I went on to remind him that the other problem that we have faced over the years is that the society placed a stigma on the color of the Negro, on the color of his skin, because he was black. Doors were closed to him that were not closed to other groups. And I'm to say to people that you ought to lift yourself by your own bootstraps, but it is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. The fact is that millions of Negroes, as a result of centuries of denial and neglect, have been left bootless, and they find themselves impoverished aliens in this affluent society. And that is a great deal that the society can and must do if the Negro is to gain the economic security that he needs. Now, one of the answers, it seems to me.
We've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. There are 10 minutes left in this spectacular and heart-stopping and mind-altering speech of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, 1967. Stanford University, about a year or so before his assassination. We'll be back.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. A lawyer for President Biden revealed Saturday five additional documents marked classified were found in his Delaware home last week. This comes amid a Justice Department investigation, and ABC's Mary Alice Parks in Washington has more on the political stakes.
We already know the Republicans have launched two investigations into these documents alone. The White House is very aware of how politically vulnerable this makes them. It can also be tricky for Republicans who have spent a lot of this last year defending President Trump's actions with and mishandling of classified information. So if they go too critical on Biden, this could backfire for them as well.
Today, the president speaks in Atlanta at the Ebenezer Baptist Church, honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. President declared a disaster for two counties in Alabama hit hard by severe storms and tornadoes last week. Those storms blamed for at least 9 deaths in 2 states. He also declared a disaster for 3 California counties where more rain and snow is falling. This is ABC News.
You wanted information as election results rolled in, and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage. And I listened to you guys, and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you, your local Civic Media radio stations, and streaming on the Civic Media app. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Joe, what do you got for us today?
In reference to Lindsey Graham, I was amazed at his comments where he said if Trump is indicted, there will be riots in the streets. Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer, and in order to be a JAG officer, you have to pass the bar. Was a JAG officer.
I'm sorry, he's a JAG officer? I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, to see a lawyer head for the rat hole instead of acting like a person with a backbone. Wow, what a profile and courage, huh?
Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.,
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. My guest is Scott Wheeler from the Epoch Times. It's Friday, that's Fridays with Sandy Williams, sir. I just, you know, you're pretty aggressive and irritated if we're Americans just like you are. But all Americans don't look through the same prism. And there's some of us that are Americans who see the amount of money that we spend on military. We make up 4% of the global population. And yet we far outstripe any other nation. And some, all of them combined, and we continue to spend almost $1 trillion a year. Again, making up only 4% of the population. And you say that other nations shouldn't see that as a threat. I don't understand that.
Well, if you could demonstrate to me a pattern. Look, I respect all points of view, but at the same time, you have to look at facts. And the facts are China says it is announced, and it's done this for decades, what its objectives are. And when your potential enemy tells you what their objective is, you should believe them.
Why
and when
they,
you see China is on track to have 5 aircraft carriers and 10 ballistic missile submarines.
How many do we have?
In six years.
Sir,
seven years.
How many do we have?
Not that many.
Five aircraft carriers.
We have less than that. So,
no. Well, we don't have less than five aircraft carriers. We have the largest.
We will have, because we are mothballing our aircraft carriers. We have some, they are non-functional.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to tell you. We are not preparing for war with China. China is preparing for war with us.
Well, you know.
Look at the data. Look at the facts. China is on track. Look, you don't build aircraft carriers and ballistic submarines.
Well, I think you build them if someone who has announced that they are your enemy has them. And the United States has.
We've never announced that China's our enemy. They've announced that we're their enemy.
No. We've declared in many ways. We've declared in many ways, and many politicians have declared that China is the threat to America. And we've talked about it.
Because China tells us they're a threat. When your enemy tells you that they're going to conquer you, should believe them.
Well, when your enemy, you just stated a conclusion. You see, 20 years ago, and maybe you were of a belief that 20 years ago China was our enemy, but 20 years ago we were not talking like that. We were of a belief that China was an economic ally, essentially, that they were a source of a big potential marketplace for us, and that they were a place that had many workers that could build what we wanted. And so China was viewed quite differently. We have evolved a different view of China over this time period.
Okay, well, hold on here a second. You're right about that. We had very foolish and naive beliefs about China, and part of the reason was because China was paying politicians to believe that, paying them lots of money, millions. But let me explain to you, while we thought that they were our economic partners and our strategic partners and said as much, China was saying, we're going to initiate the war with the West. They were saying, you won't trade L.A. for Taipei when they were talking about invading Taiwan. They said, the U.S. will not trade L.A. for Taipei, meaning if we go into Taipei, if you try to stop us, we will nuke L.A., Los Angeles. Those are belligerent and words and threats, and they've been saying them. While we were trying to be their ally, they were saying quietly and in some cases out loud, we're going to defeat you.
Well, I think that in many respects that had to do with and was a reaction to our policies associated with Taiwan. And Taiwan obviously is very contested. What the policies are towards Taiwan and Taiwan's status in the world and Taiwan's status vis-a-vis China are all very contested issues, so complicated that we have adopted a policy of purposeful ambiguity. We've decided that we can't say with words what our policy is because our policy is basically that we have agreed that
because we don't.
Well, I don't know if we do or not, because we have this ambiguous policy, and we haven't had a president who's willing to declare what our policy is, other than the fact that we've said that we're Taiwan to be invaded with force, that we would consider providing support to Taiwan. That support is also always ambiguous, and it's apparently at this point, at least, restricted to armaments. And the status of that government, it remains ambiguous as far as we're concerned. And the status of Taiwan itself has been ambiguous. They believed that they were, when the Kuomintang was in power, I think they believed that they were the government of China and that China was an intact country that was in fact subject to the control of the party in power on Taiwan. And it wasn't until about 2019 that people on Taiwan began to talk about what they called separatism. Separatism usually suggests that you're separating from a country that you are currently a part of. So I think the whole situation in Taiwan is very ambiguous, and I think that the American policies toward it could do nothing but fan flames if you were a Chinese government. Hey, Scott.
So that's the same kind of logic, stream of logic that would have lost us the Cold War, because many people like you, people who were not you, but like you, who thought like you during the Cold War, believed that we should give the Soviet Union whatever they want because they've got nuclear weapons and they could be dangerous.
No, nothing of what I just said was dependent upon a threat of nuclear warfare with Taiwan. And in fact, I don't think that people felt that way about Russia and the Cold War. I think that, first of all,
well, they did.
The Warsaw Pact.
I can assure you they did. You can go back and read their own writing. Again,
I lived through it. I lived through it, Scott, and I was a student during the time.
I served during it, and I can tell you precisely who our biggest enemy was, mostly Democrats in the United States. They undermined every effort we made to defeat the Soviet Union, most of them. There were, but most Democrats were the ones undermining our efforts to defeat the Soviet Union. So and they're the ones who were easily defeated by China, who have now been the mouthpieces for communist
Scott,
China.
Here's what I don't understand. When you talk about defeating the Soviet Union, there were nuclear weapons.
Well, and so
China has nuclear weapons.
I don't think the Cold War was ever a situation in which the United States was going to defeat the Soviet Union. And in fact, the collapse of the Soviet Union.
We did.
Well, the Soviet Union collapsed, and it collapsed in a vacuum. And I don't think there are many Americans. I mean, some would say that Reagan's parry and thrust with respect to the Star Wars called Russia to spend itself into military oblivion by too much military expenditure.
It was Strategic Defense Initiative, by the way.
Yeah,
and
yes, Star Wars,
that's what
yes.
caused it. Gorbachev, no, it's Strategic Defense Initiative. Star Wars is the name of a movie series. Gorbachev himself said that was the end result, that they could not spend. Their military was a paper tiger. Our intelligence was wrong about them. They did not have the ability to maintain the kind of forces.
Scott, hang
on
a second.
And that was the reason.
Hang on a second. I want to bring a caller in. Hey, good morning, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of comments to make about Scott's assertion about China. China makes a lot of statements that they want to be a superpower to rival the United States. And the fact of the matter is they will be one day a superpower. However, it will be a very tenuous superpower. Number one, they have a very closed economy in many ways. Oftentimes, they manipulate their foreign markets. We cannot conduct audits for many of their companies in order to trade on our American exchanges, on the New York Stock Exchange. But one comment that I do want to ask Scott, or one question I do have for him. One of the reasons why China is such a superpower right now is because of the investment of American dollars. And if China goes to war with the United States, they do realize that many of those American companies, that money that has been flowing into China, that money would cease. So they would not have the necessary revenues available to sustain a war. How would China sustain a war with the United States once they get caught off and we are no longer purchasing their products? Because it may be difficult for us to find other products, but of course there will be other countries that will be more than happy to fill that gap. So, Scott, that's my question for you.
It's a great question, Cassandra. Scott, you want to respond?
Spot on. Everything you said is accurate. The one issue I would take with it is, yes, they're dependent on these corporations, but look how they've gotten these corporations. They've actually enticed them into investing in China, and then once they get their plans, This happened repeatedly in the 1990s. Let me address Cassandra's concern because she asked a legitimate question, and she obviously knows what she's talking about. China was enticing American corporations to come into China, and they would make them file, for example, there was a very big case in 1994 in Plant 85 in Columbus, Ohio. The union wanted to buy Plant 85 from McDonnell Douglas, and McDonnell Douglas would not sell Plant 85, which made MX missiles for the U.S. military, would not sell the factory to the union. Instead, they got the Clinton administration to give them an export control to sell Plant 85 to China for less money than the union was willing to pay for the factory. Then China turned it into a silkworm missile factory. We confirmed that. This happened over and over and over again in the 90s and has been happening ever since, but it really began and got in full force. But what to Cassandra's point, we don't have the financial capability to sustain a war with the U.S. They are taking – it's not going to happen tomorrow or next week, but they are – if you look at their global initiatives, the Belt and Road Initiative, they are securing critical elements to our weapon systems like lithium, lanthanides, and yttrium, dysprosium. They are securing around the world critical elements that we need for our military, and they are going to control the flow of those elements for our weapons.
My issue with what you said is China enticed the business community to come to China. I was working in industry at that time, and when the company that I worked at went overseas, it wasn't because China somehow enticed them. It was because our government passed the laws that made it possible for those companies to go overseas. They couldn't have done any of that without our government agreeing to that. So they didn't entice them to do anything.
Look, I just said that. I pointed this out. They did this. They went to what did McDonnell Douglas do? They went to the Clinton administration, who was getting millions of dollars in illegal campaign donations from communist China, to issue an export license so they could export highly sensitive
U.S.
weapons technology to China.
We didn't have to agree with that.
He's talking about a specific plant and a specific, but the World Trade Organization,
by the way, we didn't. Our military export control regime was raising Cain over this. While it was being approved, they were saying, we cannot let this factory go to China. They will turn it into a silkworm missile factory. It was the politicians, it was Bill Clinton specifically, that signed the export control waiver saying, we're going to override our own advice from the military saying, don't send it, and we're going to let them buy it. They did that. It was the politicians.
Let me
go to break, Sandy, and then we'll let you respond.
No, I'm not going to respond. I have a question.
Yeah, because we're right at the top of the hour. Can we go on, or we need to take the break?
We need to go to break.
All right, we got to go to break. We'll be right back.
You wanted information as election results rolled in, and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage, and I listened to you guys, and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you. Your local Civic Media radio stations and streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Highs level off around 38 this afternoon. Under cloudy skies, winds out of the south, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 33. Overcast. Cloudy skies expected tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 39. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Oshkosh Air Support. 98.3 FM, WISS, 1100 AM. Right now, 28.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. Friday's with Sandy Williams. My guest is Scott Wheeler of Epic Times. Sandy,
So, Scott, I understand what you're saying and that your view is that China is a threat, and it's a threat that is sitting ready to do something to the United States. You know, you talk about the threat of trading L.A. for Taiwan. And you talk about how it is that they're building. I understand that. And you talk about their Belt and Road Initiative as being one that creates, and at least economically, creates threats because it puts them in control of some vital resources. So my question is, what is the implication of all this? Because essentially, you're describing China as our enemy, and you've indicated that. China views us as their enemy. It's hard to tell where that started, right? Who's the one that initiated the "you're our enemy" kind of a view of things? But once two countries decide that they're enemies of one another, it begins to dictate a bunch of behaviors. It dictates what kind of munitions you build, what kind of infrastructure militarily you build, and how you conduct yourself. And so, you know, there is definitely in world affairs the Newtonian principles of actions and equal and opposite reactions, and we obviously have that in play with China. But all of your talk about China suggests to me that what is the policy you think we ought to be implementing with China? Should we be considering a preemptive war against China to stop them in their belts and suspenders initiative, and to do what?
It's Belt and Road Initiative, but we should take back our industrial base to the United States. Yeah. We all remember the shortage of masks, and China was the only place you could buy them. Why in the world have we allowed this to happen? It's at the political level that all these decisions have been made. We've allowed our own industry to migrate to China.
Well, now, Scott, I was in business for a long career, and I had clients who moved to China. I can guarantee you that the United States government had nothing to do with their decision to move. What China did have to offer people was a very organized approach to building a new factory and finding workers. So if anybody invented a new widget that they wanted to get manufactured quickly, many of them went to China because it was much easier to build the widget. The Apple phone.
That's inconsistent with what I said.
You said the government fostered it, and I'm saying the government made it possible.
Our government created a very hostile business environment for American companies and China. You guys were accusing me of misstating something by saying China enticed U.S. businesses. They enticed them by creating an environment of cheap labor and lack of government oversight. Now, a lot of that was a facade, and it did not turn out as many businesses, many industries discovered once they got there, trying to the agreements that they signed. But that's a different issue. happened was our own business looked, for example, one huge stupid thing, and I wrote lots of stuff about this and produced an entire documentary on this alone. We had a mine in Southern California, an open mine, that was producing what's called lanthanides, rare earths. They are critical for our strategic defense. Now, China was, in the 1990s, China was paying certain politicians in the United States and had a very good relationship with spouses of those politicians, and they wanted the Mountain Pass mine shut down because they wanted the Baotou rare. At that time, the Mountain Pass mine in Southern California produced 92% of the world's lanthanides and almost 100% of the United States. They got the, they claimed that the Mountain Pass mine was an environmental hazard, shut it down, and then we began importing all of our lanthanides from the Baotou rare earth mine in China. In 2004, Baotou says, while we're in the middle of a war, two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they say, hey, we're not going to sell you any more lanthanides. Just shut us off. Those were critical elements for our JDAMs and our missile guidance systems, the things that we really relied on. And China said, no, we're not going to sell them to you anymore. The Defense Department suddenly woke up, ignoring my 1998 documentary that said this would happen, completely ignored it, and then suddenly their hair is on fire. We need these elements, rare earth elements, and we can't get them because China says we're not selling them to you. They truncated the market. That was what they did. That's economic warfare, and China was involved in it. And just as you pointed out, at that time, we were calling China our buddies and our friends. We were willing to let them sell us the critical elements that are used in high-tech weapon systems. You see what I mean? I mean, it makes no sense unless you look at it from that understanding, that perspective.
Well, you know, clearly the opinions that you have rendered that's what they are. They're not facts. And whether
well,
or not.
They are facts.
No, whether or not.
Everything I said is fact. I didn't make up any of this. It's not my opinion. Well, I recited facts for you.
Well, again.
Things that actually happened.
Well, again, based on the fact that China is now one of our arch enemies, again, somebody that we've been a major trading partner with over the last two decades or three decades, this is not in keeping with the fact that we have become those trading partners, and the fact that others want to somehow ignore that, and now they're the arch enemy number one in this nation. It's hard for a lot of us to swallow when we know that, you know, all of our corporations that were there and waxing rich off employing those people from China, all of a sudden now they're our number one enemies. Look, we got to go. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Connor, for a great week. Sandy, as always, thank you. We'll be back on next Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.
ABC.